Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me this week on Tia Time. We'll get to the show in just a moment. First, I wanted to say thank you to all of you who have posted a rating on Apple Podcast. Apple Podcast is an app that can be downloaded to your phone or computer. The algorithm it uses allows more artists and art enthusiasts like yourselves to hear about the show. So if you haven't posted a rating yet, do it now. Thank you. On with the show. Welcome to Tia Time with Artists, the weekly podcast where we discuss the methods, challenges, and real-life experiences of living our creative dreams. What kind of creative warrior are you? Musician, filmmaker, painter, choreographer, poet, sculptor, fashionista? Let's talk about it right now. I'm your host, Tia Imani Hanna. Welcome to Tia Time with Artists, and my guest this week is Michael Hanna, and he is a singer and an amazing songwriter as well, and I'm so grateful that he is here. He's my cousin, and so I'm going to brag on him a little bit. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me so much. I am definitely most grateful and happy to be here.
So it's a thrill to have you on the show. It's great to talk with you. We don't get a chance to do that very often, which I'm going to remedy. But I want to talk about your influences, your start, where you want to go, what you want to do. So let's talk about why singing. What was it about music? Was it just because of family influences? Did you play an instrument first? What was it about singing that drew you to that art, that particular skill?
Hopefully, the people who are listening, some of your listener base is hopefully familiar with our family lineage. And so without needing to do too much name dropping, because I imagine we'll get to plenty of that, but definitely without saying that, yes, I grew up in a musical family, that music was always around. So it was never that there was an aha moment for when music was introduced to me. Actually, as a kid, I wanted to pursue the visual arts. And I was drawing and doing I was in art classes, and a lot of my curriculum formally was in visual arts. And I had music as well. All of the kind of programs that we were in had all that stuff available to us. And of course, I was singing in church, singing in the choir. And so there was a handful of things that you're interested in. And I was pursuing drawing. I wanted to be a comic book artist. And as I became more entrenched in music, there was an aha moment for me while I was singing in the church one day, and I couldn't have been older than 10 years old, maybe even not even older than 9 or so. Old enough to think I know something, but I know certainly I had one of those moments that I really heard myself. You're singing, you grow up doing the thing, but I had that moment where I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. And so I definitely, from there, my passion for being in that space where I felt like I could really hear my own voice in a way that I couldn't in terms of expressing through visual arts or, you know, through other the means, athletics and things like that. So yeah, I think certainly that was where it happened. Even though I was exposed to music in an array of different aspects of my life, I had that moment in the church. I had that. That was when it started.
When you were drawing, because that touched a different part of your brain or a different part of your heart, did that continue? Do you still do the fine art and the drawing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I got a few tattoos, and all of which that I've designed myself. So that's the most easy way to access where my art still lives.
Okay.
But no, I definitely have. I keep sketchbooks, and it's always just therapy for me. Oftentimes what I'm drawing is an expression of how I'm feeling, whether it's just a little doodle. Oftentimes I like to do caricature style work of the people that I'm close with, my wife or my friends, or if I'm on a gig and you see a moment that kind of stands out, you want to just... So oftentimes my stuff is small, and it's my sketchbooks can fit in my book bag. They're not large scale works or things like that. But some of them I thought, hey, this might be cool enough to put in a decent enough frame and put it out at least on my own wall, let alone somebody else's.
Well, that when you do your memoirs, you can always have your cartoons, the ones that you think that are ready for publishing, to go with your memoir down the line. Yeah. They keep that in the sketchbooks, Michael Hanna sketchbooks.
Yeah.
You know, for sale now. Don't miss it.
This is
so it's I can see that.
We'll come back around to it. It'll always be there. I've got plenty of stuff.
So when you're in the sketch mode, is it the same kind of mode in your, I guess, in your brain when you're thinking about art? It's like when you start to write music, do you feel like you go to the same place as you do when you're sketching? Is it that comfortable kind of place, or is it a different place?
I believe, yeah, it is definitely a similar place. I think I was trying to explain this to someone else in terms of trying to access different parts of music from a different instrument. So once you have a relationship with the music, the instrument is just a conduit, a medium of trying to express the thing that's already there. And so in the same sense, sketching or dealing with visual arts, is, I have something that I'm trying to say, and this is how I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to get to it. So similarly, and I imagine yourself and other composers and songwriters deal with just having certain ways that are comfortable to your process, your method, things that reveal maybe the ideas that you're trying to get to that they themselves aren't the idea. So I'm going to just keep doing this thing and keep drawing some shapes until something comes out. As in, like, maybe sometimes singing for me, I'll just riff around with no real structure until maybe a melody forms, until something reveals itself as being more of a device. So yeah, similarly, when I'm sketching, oftentimes I don't have any real direction when I start, because it's more about, this is just, this feels good and it feels therapeutic, and I'm churning through the process to find the thing that will reveal itself. Sometimes, like I said, when I'm doing caricature stuff, and I think, yeah, as in with songwriting, when you have, boom, this rhythmic thing that's just stuck in your head, is, oh no, I need to lock that down, because that's yeah. gold. And so yeah. sometimes, yeah, I'll, growing up, I would see things like in the leaves or in the grass or in certain shapes that would look like something else that would, like, maybe tell a different story. Do you see the guy in the corner of the leaves right there, or in the clouds? Look, that cloud looks like an elephant, you know? So right. I think, yeah, that's a similar thing. Are you able to capture the idea from whether it reveals itself to you or whether you're trying to bring it out? So I think that right. as in visual arts and as in music, that there's that space that's similar in terms of the process.
I always wanted to know how other artists approach their art, because a lot of folks don't really talk about that. I know for me, a lot of the time, it's write something because I'm taking a walk in the woods. It's almost always a physical thing. I have to be moving, like I have to get out of the body first. And then it will come up, and then some rhythm will come up because I'm breathing differently, or I'm in a place where I'm hearing a plane fly over at that exact moment that the garbage can fell over there. And then all of a sudden there's a new rhythm. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wait, there it is. So it to me, that's always such a magical thing. And then I think, well, I'm just a crazy person. So because that's how my brain works. But other people don't hear it that way. And I'm always surprised. Like, you don't hear that? You don't hear that? But what I hear, and then another musician hears, is completely two different things. You can be standing next to each other and they come up with something completely different. So I'm always interested to see how people get to their compositions or their ideas for lyrics. Like, I have no clue. So I've written a few lyrics. I don't like them. They're not very good. But I do it sometimes because I'm like, listen to these words. Okay, let's start. Let's do something. But other folks will hear the lyrics first. Now, for you, do you hear lyrics first or do you hear music first?
I mean, coming back to what we were just saying. So without doubling back on the process and trying to reveal or churn it out, for me, I'm an MC. I'm a lyricist. And yep. a lot of people maybe don't know that so much, because certainly probably more readily in an environment where I'm singing, where I'm vocalizing melodically. But when I think about myself as a vocalist, I certainly include that aspect of my artistry. And it's always been there. It's not, oh, I just started rapping. I've been writing rhymes. I've been performing lyrics in that way as well for a long time. And certainly as a kid, you grow up just memorizing lyrics until your favorite songs and things like this, until you find the ones that are like, that's me. That's the one that I would have written if I were writing rhymes. And so from that space, lyrically, I try to come from that genuine place of what do I want to be able to hold true to my name when I'm speaking these words, if someone is going to say, oh, that was what Mike said. And so to be able to have that aspect woven into whatever lyric creating. But with regard to what comes first, it's just as well, right? And people who deal with rhyme know this is when you're doing little lyrical kind of exercises, freestyle, improvisation, things like this, people will throw out a word. It's just rhyme on, just riff on that and just go. Okay. And so similarly, oftentimes you might just be, some words just sound good together. Some lyrics, I think that's the aspect of poetry, right? Sometimes beautiful verbiage is just, it's just candy. It's just, that's just nice. Maybe it doesn't have to mean or really have any real substance versus, hey, I'm trying to get this message out. So I need to deal with this very carefully and craft this. So I think, it still harkens back to where you are emotionally, where I am emotionally, creatively. I haven't been in a space where I've done a whole lot of penning of heavy lyrics in that sense. I've been trying to deal more with the candy of it. And I feel oftentimes when you're talking about MC and we talk about rhymes, that world just begs for, I can't. Ain't nothing sweet. We need that real. And so it asks you to kind of dig a little deeper. And certainly I try to stay limber, right? I'm always doing a little something, but I've definitely been doing more singing and writing for melodies, writing lyrics that, like I said, are just sweet to the ear and a little easier on the palate.
Pass an offering, please. You gotta tell the truth when you're talking to me. There's forgiveness for ignorance when acknowledgement speaks. The truth is in the music, it'll prove it to you. Follow the seed. The truth is in the music, it'll prove it to you. Follow the seed. Hard to see and often harder to hear. The moment you depart from truth is the start of your fear. Joy is in a smile like pain is a part of the tear. Joy is in a smile like pain is a part of the tear. We're all aiming for happiness when the target is clear. Said I'm fighting for the right to love until it sits permanent. And I'm rising to the light above, fixed in the firmament, compounding. Fighting for the right to love until it's permanent. And I'm rising to the light above, fixed in a firmament, compounded with powers. The truth flowers the further we get down the road, enough to know that it's urgent to give. Fighting for the right to love until it's permanent. And I'm rising to the light above, fixed in a firmament, compounded with powers. The truth flowers the further we get down the road, enough to know that it's urgent to give.
I know you studied it. Was it Xavier?
I did.
For
Xavier, okay, with so a Z. We're touchy about that. it's spelled with an X, but the way that it's pronounced is
Xavier. Okay, I'm sorry. That you studied jazz. Now, was that because that was the closest thing to, I guess, doing more hip hop kind of style, or just a love for both things?
Well, actually, at Xavier, I didn't study jazz proper. I wouldn't study jazz proper until I got here to North Carolina Central. But at Xavier, I continued in it's more classical / contemporary African-American rooted. So coming out of high school in Detroit as well, that was a similar programming, doing a lot of Moses Hogan and all the stuff that was written for that contemporary Black ensemble sound. And so I continued in that kind of study at Xavier. But being in New Orleans, you can't not be into jazz. And of course, with family inclination and just being exposed, I certainly found my way into certain corners and got a good taste. Maybe not as much in college, as I always look back on my time in New Orleans and I'm like, oh man, I could have gotten so much more if I knew, if I was so much more hip. But certainly it was an invaluable time. And yeah, I wouldn't study jazz proper until I got here to North Carolina. So I did, though, in between my time in New Orleans and in between getting here, I was in Chicago. And certainly I would say that at that point I was digging deeper into my hip hop roots. And I had a project that I was working on with one of my high school classmates that really started to gain some traction and then ended up losing some steam. And it's still semi-available out there, but that was what I was doing at that time. And then I came to North Carolina and started to deal with some other things, but certainly no shortage of experience along the way. But I've never left hip hop alone though. And that's been the hard part, is trying to make sure that stays a part of my narrative while people may be experiencing me in different ways. Like I was just recently singing some country and people engage me in that way. And they may not know that I sing jazz. They're like, I thought you were a country singer.
Music is music. Good music is good music. Yep. That's all there really is to know. At least in my book, you can't limit yourself to one thing because then there's no growth ever. So yeah, I can understand that. So you're in North Carolina now during the COVID crisis. Now, what have you been doing in your COVID time, in your lockdown?
So I was saying this, and I guess I got to get into it now. Essentially, you know how everyone else, life was going in a way, whether wonderfully or not, it was going in a way that I thought I had some traction on. I have my hands on the wheel here. This is great. I'm leading my own life. Go figure. Boom, COVID hits. And so at the time I was still hosting a few radio shows on 90.7 WNCU here in Durham. Shout out to everybody still there doing really great work. Alan Thompson and Serena Wiley, both in, they got the show. Serena actually ended up taking over the show that I was doing, the jazz stage. But so long story short, I needed to go to Canada. My family is in Canada and they were closing the borders. And we were concerned that we may not essentially be able to see my folks for who knows when this thing was going to be over. And I had to make a hard choice to essentially let my spot on the radio go. And as well, of course, all gigs. I had a calendar full of gigs. I was working pretty steadily. I've been working for a long time now with a group called Irresistible Groove. Shouts out to Lee Johnson and those guys. Lee is a killing tenor sax player and band leader. And so I've been working with those guys, full calendar gone. So all of a sudden, I'm a starving artist again. You work real hard to not have to carry that. It's, oh no, sure. They got me anyway. So yeah, I'm in Canada from March until pretty much September.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I pretty much spent the year in Canada. And it was cool because we got to quarantine together. And we just packed up, us and the dog, me and all, the whole, we just trucked up to Canada. And I actually got a chance to do a little bit of music there. So my mother is pastor of a church there, Fourth Avenue Baptist Church in Ottawa, Ontario. And so they as well had no one in the church, and they were doing the live streaming of her sermons, her and just people basically to man the cameras and the organist. And I would come and sing. And as well, my father was there. He would sing sometimes. And that was a blessing and just a gift to be able to stay singing and as well being able to kind of be in service of the church and to my family. And so through that as well, another friend of my parents, a gifted pianist out of Ottawa, John Kofi DePauw. And he often does a lot of concert, more classically oriented works, solo style, or I've seen him working with other string instrumentalists and things like this. But yeah, he and I got together and did some soul tunes, couple jazz ballads, just as a duet kind of show. And we live streamed that from the church. And so that was really probably the jewel. Oh, one of the really cool things that I got to do, my father and I sang in the TD Ottawa Jazz Festival. Michael Curtis, yes. Hanna and Michael. They announced me as Michael Anthony Hanna. So I know this is another point, right? My name is Mike. My given name is Michael Anthony Hanna. Going by the spelling, I've been going by that professionally and artistically. But yeah, so he and I did this, and it was really cool. Obviously, this would have usually been outdoors and all the stages and things like that. So they as well were adapting and, you know, doing the live streaming thing. But yeah, we put together this a cappella arrangement of a blues popularized by Joe Williams.
Yeah, I got to see that. Cool. I did get to see that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was lovely.
Yeah,
enjoyed it.
I'm so glad. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So yeah, I got to be a part of some cool things during quarantine, and now I'm back in North Carolina, and
you're singing country.
You know what I'm singing? I don't want to monopolize the trajectory of questions, but I can tell you.
No, that's fine. I want to know what's going on. So have you found some musicians in North Carolina that are besides your band to work with or do collaborations with? Or you just started to hang out with people who are doing country instead? Or what happened?
So I've been down in Carolina for a little while now. Definitely made some friends along the way. A lot of brilliant musicians. One of whom, guitarist that I've been playing with for some time, Will Darity. Shout out to FTMF. That's his project. He does booking and some artist management as well. And that's essentially the whole country connection. I sing plenty of, I've got some other friends that I've sung with and done some stuff with, but in terms of that's gotten some real traction. The project that we started a few years back, he calls me up, he's like, yo, let's do a Charlie Pride tribute. Charlie Pride is like an icon in country, who happens to be a black guy. And people in country know that. It's not little known, right? He's right. Definitely a hero. And I had to come into learning about him and learning to celebrate his music and be able to step into being able to sing his songs. But that was the thing. It was basically a bunch of brothers doing country, doing Charlie Pride. And we would flip some of the tunes to be a little bit more, whatever you want to say, soul-oriented or...
just a little bit more stylistic
yeah,
change.
Yeah, but... most of it would be, we're going to lay this down dead on so that folks have that shock value of, whoa, oh, we did not expect this.
Okay.
But so fast forward, we did a few shows over the years where we've opened up with other acts and doing the Charlie Pride tribute. But just recently, yeah, we were a part of this really cool, I want to say it's something like a festival. It's like an all-encompassing platform. The given name is the Country Soul Songbook Summit. And it's essentially just this whole thing where there was all kinds of content geared around inclusion of black and brown and marginalized voices in country and in that rural aesthetic of music and culture. And so there was just all kinds of really cool stuff. It was a part of it. But yeah, Will and I, we got to sing as well. It was just a duet version, still doing some Charlie Pride stuff. But then as well, we did some stuff where we were part of a bigger group. And yeah, that was most recently, just about a month ago. And so I'm still being able to ride on the high of that and the friends that I've made off of that project. So yeah.
Is that project going to record? Is there going to be an album coming out of that?
In terms of the dub, the Dirty Dub Charlie Pride tribute, we've been talking about that. Will's kind of one of those guys who's got his hands in a lot of pots. And so for me, I have some other things going and I've always said to him, hey, yo, we need to do this. And hopefully it'll happen, but I'm not saying that it's going to happen necessarily.
I would like to see it. So I give him a little nudge for me. I know he doesn't know me, but hey, people want to hear this.
Well, until then, you can check out the Soul Country Soul Songbook Summit. I think that some of the content is still available like on the website.
That's definitely good to know because I had not heard about that. So that's really cool. Yeah. So you've got that project now. You've got other projects that you're working on your own, right? Now, what are you working on right now?
A lot of folks are familiar with the John Doe. That's essentially my band. Mine to say that I'm a part of that group and the guys in that band would say it's their band too. But we've definitely been working for a while and our project is coming together and I'm happy about that. But as well on some more solo individual stuff, I've been working with these guys and I'm really excited. We've got some new content coming out pretty soon. E.L. Scott. So that's two guys, Eskina Lee, who is a guitarist and a producer, and Lance Scott, who's a bassist and producer. And Lance and I have known each other for some years out of North Carolina Central. And both of those guys are killing producers, killing musicians. And Lance and I had a relationship, and I hit him up. I'm like, yo, Lance, what's good? Let's get into the lab. Let's work on something. And I'm working with Tyler, Skeena Lee. And so, yeah, we got together and we've been working on some things for interrupted by COVID. So we started working together like the end of last year, and then things got interrupted and we picked back up when I got back to Carolina in September. And yeah, so we've got some stuff hopefully ready to go close to the end of this year, early next year. And this is definitely going to be more hip hop soul oriented as opposed to some jazz stuff as well. Of course, that you know, the jazz makes its way there. If you had it, yeah. You know, you dang near could just call it all jazz. We got to have genres and compartmentalized stuff.
Yeah, I know. And I think that's starting to disappear. I really do. Because people aren't feeling restricted by that anymore. Mm-hmm. Because we aren't selling albums in a traditional way anymore. It's all tracks. Yeah. So you do what you do. Yeah. And I think that's really good at this point in time. It's like I, for one, have been waiting years to do different things and I can't afford to do it all as one project, but I might be able to do one track. And so that track's done. Then I do another track and maybe it's a different style because that's where I'm at right now. And I think that's a much better way to go with it. We didn't have the technology before. We do now. So I'm taking advantage. So I think it's really a good way to go. And I think it'll free things up for a lot of folks to not just have to be stuck in the genre. I think I've gotten stuck in the drama of jazz only because what I do is considered jazz, but it's not what I, when you listen to it, it's not jazz. It's improvisation, but it's not jazz. So there's moments of jazz, but there's a little bit of country in there. There's a little R&B in there. There's some dance music in there. There's a lot of Arabic stuff in there. I'm like, I don't even know where that comes from, but it's just there.
This is a part of years of educational pounding these messages into my brain. That's eventually you're going to believe some of it. But for me, the way that I'm able to like excuse some of it, I learned that jazz has three elements always. It's got the blues, it's got improvisation. What is it? Jazz, blues, improvisation. And dang, I'm missing the third element real quick. But so for me, when I think about improvisation, when I think about blues, and that harkens to deeper stories, right? Whether you want to say, oh, there's literally, I hear the four chord, and then I hear this. No, that the structure maybe doesn't have to be there. But when you think about the narrative of the people and the culture that created that music, the terms of that honesty and that genuine spirit of I gotta sing these woes or these emotions out in a way that's there, you know what I mean? When you even when you switch styles, or certainly the improvisation, definitely whether it's swinging like Charlie Parker or you know doing Bird and all kind of dizzy style stuff, like you don't have to do that to be improvising. And I think as well, like you said, certainly mentioning the Arabic style stuff. But that's the continent. That's Africa all day. You right. know, I mean, so yeah, for me, I've just been trying to find places of embracing like all of those elements, like unabashedly. Yeah, no, that's my stuff. And especially when it comes out as when you're not working for it, this is just in me. It's just, no, that's my music. But you're not going to tell me it's not.
I remember hearing a group out of Scotland and it's called Salsa Celtica. Mm. If you haven't heard them, you should. Okay. And they have salsa musicians mixed with Celtic musicians, and they'll have the flute that they play. It's almost like a bagpipe, but it's called the Eulalian pipes or something like that. And they'll have fiddle players, but they're playing Celtic style, but they'll have salsa underneath it, and it works. Mm. It is deep.
I can only imagine.
It is so
it
deep.
It sounds exciting. Sounds like a party.
It's really cool. Yeah, it's really cool. And you think, oh, this wouldn't work. But then all of a sudden, you'll hear, and whoa.
Yeah.
Some people think are a little bit weirded out by it. I just think it's fantastic. So
this reminds me of, so I got to spend a summer back in 2010 in Beirut, Lebanon. And yeah, I was with a young lady who was singing, who basically had a gig. And it was a part of a program. It was a lineup of other artists. And she was one of the artists in that lineup. And so one of the other groups was essentially doing something similar. It was a group of guys from Cuba, and they had their lead vocalist was a Lebanese woman. Mm-hmm. And they were calling it Arabo Cuban. And so she would come on the rumba and all of that stuff underneath. It was great. It was also cool because me being like one of the only other black guys there, I just de facto became a part of the Cuban band. Cubano, yes. Oh, yeah, sure. So,
oh, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. I'm glad that you got an opportunity to do that. So that's one of the things I haven't had the chance to do is play with a lot of international players. I have one oud player that I work with, Igor Huat. He's Lebanese. And he's a fantastic oud player, but he played jazz saxophone first, which is interesting. And then he switched over. He's only been playing oud for maybe 5 or 6 years, but you can't tell. It's like he's been playing his whole life. And he improvises. So he's playing like some funk on the oud. And we're like, yeah. So it's very cool. I'm waiting for COVID to be over so we can do, because we're going to do some duet stuff together. And I was like, we're just waiting for that to happen. And I know a Lebanese singer. She teaches over at Berkeley, Christiane Karam, wonderful singer. And she does a lot of improv. We both have studied in the Bobby McFerrin tradition of kind of the free improv in that way and circle singing and that sort of thing. And she does that. But she also does work with Baltic, women's Baltic choirs, which is a whole different sound. If you haven't heard a Baltic choir, it's amazing sound. It's like a wall of sound with all these women's voices and the harmonies are so lush and it's super exciting. So if you, you know, get a chance to listen to Baltic choirs.
How many voices that's in the amazing. In the choir?
Anywhere from 30 to 100, depends on the group. There's this, I can't even explain it. It's this sound and you just go, whoa, like this. And it's, but it lifts you up. It's wonderful. Really wonderful.
That kind of effect often to me, I think you can't duplicate without having those kind of numbers involved, right? Mm-hmm. You think about symphony or even a big band, it's only close to 17, 18 pieces, but it's still that much more formidable. But then, yes, yeah, symphonic piece where you're just getting on 50 pieces. And then when you have those all doing kind of the same thing as in a choir, and I come from that experience of doing a lot of ensemble singing. And let alone being out in the audience, in the group, you can feel powering up. It's just, so I can only imagine that. Yeah, it's probably great. I got lots of good homework to do, listening stuff. You're giving me some jewels.
If you're still locked down, it's a good thing to be able to have new stuff to hear.
Definitely.
So unfortunately, I have not been locked down. I have had to go to work every day since the beginning of this thing. Luckily, no one's gotten sick. But I almost envy people who are able to lock down, because I would like to be sitting in home and listening to some music and writing and in my studio and I'm doing a podcast, but that means the 4 hours I have before I go to work and then that's it. You know, so it's go to work, do the podcast, go to work, come home, go to sleep, get up, do it again. So I envy the people who get to stay home and, oh, I can do this right now. I'm like, yeah, I wish I could. But I'm grateful for my job. But at the same time, I would much rather be doing this.
Grass is always greener, because you know that our folks are that are sitting down like, oh, give me something to do. Folks just stepping out, going to the end of the block aimlessly. Like, I just wanted to take a walk. But, you know, maybe that's good, because some people haven't taken any walks.
Yeah, exactly. It gives you the chance to take a walk.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting, actually, for me. What, a walk? Oh, I'd love to go do a walk. I'd love to be able to take a nap in the middle of the afternoon. But it's all good. I get it, because it is hard to be on Zoom all day long and doing meetings and trying to do your work and all of that kind of stuff. So I get it. And if you have kids at home, that's hard, because they can't go and play and they're with adults all the time. Who wants to be with the adults all the time when you're little?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So I can only imagine.
Want to be with your friends.
I've been on both sides. Like when I got back to Carolina, the group I was telling you about, Irresistible Groove, we do mostly wedding stuff. And so a lot of the stuff that got postponed from early in the year, a bunch of it got piled into September. So I did have a little bit of work in September. It was weird because after that, it was back to nothing.
Right.
But I was moving around just a little bit, and it was really cool to be able to see how people were adapting, doing the distancing and limiting their crowds and all the whole nine. But just to still be on stage and have a moment where it's like, oh yeah, I do this. That was great. But one of the guys in the band is a trumpet player, and he's a teacher. And he's, I believe, back in the classroom now, but at that time they were still at home. And he just had the stories from all the parents talking about whether this work was simple or not. He was telling the one, he said, I sent a video, and he's a music teacher, so it's identify the instruments in the symphony. What does a bassoon look like? What does, you know, the cello look like? Things like this. He said, I sent out a 15-minute video to be done in a week, and you have parents coming back like, this is too much work. Can't expect my child to complete this. What are you trying to set him back? It's like, so you just have to take that pause of like, I thought I was being gracious and making it simple, but it's just so wild to see how different people are dealing with this. And certainly, yeah, the teachers and people with kids at home, that's, whew.
Yeah, it's tough. And unfortunately, because we weren't locked down long enough, it's going to extend for a whole nother year, probably.
Yeah.
But we're recording this on the day the new president got announced. So hopefully things will change.
Yes, indeed.
Hopefully things will change. Yeah. So anyway, and woo-woo, that's over.
Certainly that it's over. However people are leaning, because I'm certainly trying to do good about engaging people with different opinions than me. But just the anxiety of this all is not good for anybody. This is not a healthy way to do these things. And hopefully, like you said, this new administration will bring some unifying elements and everybody can take a breather and just step back off of the ledge.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll focus more on just healing the country, in the sense of we actually do have a pandemic happening. Right. That needs to be addressed before everything. Yeah. Because we can't heal the country if everybody's actually sick and dying. So just that. There's so many levels. So hopefully, yeah, that will move in that direction first, and then we'll deal with everything else as it comes along. But you just never know.
Cool times, though. Certainly amazing times on either side, right? Like for me, it's always trying to find the silver lining, to be cliche, but we're here. We're able to have this dialogue. We're able to witness the way in which things are happening, and hopefully that is a part of the healing, right? Is being able to engage concurrently while witnessing, waiting. I think a lot of times people, because I was talking actually to Lance, the guy with that I'm working on some stuff with, was telling me about. And we were talking about just how you have kids politicized in a way that I certainly wasn't growing up, talking about, yeah, we need to hold on to the Senate. We need to flip the Senate. Middle school kids, you're go for it. This is amazing that you have that kind of engagement, that kind of involvement. So that's always encouraging and just amazing to witness to me. And I try and draw an inspiration for that as well. And that's my overall, I try to come back to that, because we need a little encouragement. We need some inspiration, folks. I feel like feeding on we're feeding on fear, we're feeding on anger, and we're feeding on all of these divisive elements. And that makes its way into all everything that we do, right? Like,
yeah, it does.
So if we want to see the healing, we got to put some healing into it. We got to put it on our words. So in terms of coming back to lyrics, that's why I've been more inclined. A lot of people making protest music, a lot of people trying to channel that anger. That's what's up. Go for it. But I've been like, that's not going to feed me the way is needed. And I need to give myself and people who are engaging me, and give them something sweet to feed on, because yes. I feel like that's what's going to make a bigger impact from my vantage, using that I language.
Oh, yeah. That's the only vantage you have, is the one that your experiences is what's going to create truth in your world and what's going to make a difference in the people that are close to you. They're going to affect those people in a certain way. Everyone you affect is going to affect someone else, and it's going to go out like, you know, ripples on a pond. If you throw a pebble in the pond and the ripples go out, that's what you create in the middle is going to go out in waves. So I get what you're saying. It's, I believe the same thing. I've been telling everybody since the beginning of COVID, I said, just make more art. Just make more art, because everybody's already afraid. And so what is our job? We're artists. We have decided to be artists, or it's decided for us that the artist chosen you to be the artist. Yeah. And because that's what comes through your blood and your veins and your mind and your voice and your vision. So put it out there as much as possible. That's our job. So if we do that, we can't go wrong. We can't go wrong.
Agreed.
You know, not everybody's going to love what you do. So what? It's not about that.
No.
It creates conversation. It creates inspiration for other artists. Like, oh, I saw what that person did. Oh my gosh, I had that same idea, but I would take it this way. Okay, go ahead, take it that way. You see something in art, you steal it, and then your own. That's how it's always been done. Not because it's like the only way to do it. It's just there is nothing new under the sun. It's just, it's how you put it together that's new.
Yeah.
And like we're talking about these different artists that put these different genres together. So yeah, because that it's time. We are a world culture. This is not the only place you can be. So yes, I get it. If you're a blues artist and that's what you love, do then just do the blues. You don't have to mix it with anything else. But if somebody else does, that's good too. I know as jazz artists, a lot of times we run into purists and they're like, you cannot call that jazz. This is not jazz. You can only play it like this. And don't do it that way. I went to a jazz camp once and got a chance to play with these really great artists as part of a workshop. And they said, okay, decide on what tune you're going to do and then count it off. And so there was five people who never played together before. And I said, what about this tune? What about this tune? What about? And they're all sitting there going, I'm the only woman in the group too. And I'm like, okay. And then I said, okay, let's just do something. Everybody knows Ipanema? Sure. And then I counted it as a swing. And the drummer got off on me and yelled at me for 20 minutes, wasting all of our time. You counted it off as a swing. I said, yes, I did.
That's the third element that I had forgotten. Blues, improvisation, and a swing.
Yeah. And then I was thinking about it. And I was like, man, he doesn't know that A.C. Jobim, or Tom Jobim, when he wrote Ipanema, he was listening to A-Train. That they fit on top of each other. He doesn't know that.
Hey, gotta let him know sometime.
And it was like, he just, in the one of the bases later, he came over to me and said, I really apologize for him. I don't know what is wrong with him.
Well, you already know that, you know, people get puffed up on this music too, right? Because I can play the whole Omni book, or I transcribe giant steps, or that I feel entitled to be able to whatever, belittle other, you know, ways of interpreting this music. It's like, no, you need to stop, because they weren't doing that. Like these people who you're, you know, idolizing and putting on certain pedestals, you're like, you're toxifying their legacy when you leave from that place. And thankfully, I've been around guys and instrumentalists and women. There's a lot of killing female instrumentalists and vocalists around here, too. And I'm just trying to keep that in the narrative. Like, hey, look, chill all that out. There ain't no space for that. If you really want to serve the music, right, you can't get caught up on feeling like your voice is more valid than another's, right?
I've had the chance to play with some well-known players, and I talked to some other well-known players. I said, oh, what did you think about playing with them? And I said, well, I just felt like I couldn't even measure up to them at all. And I'm going, well, they're willing to play with you, so obviously you measure it up. So what are you thinking? Because that's not what those players were thinking. They're thinking that you're a good player. And then there's other older players who'd be like, you aren't good enough to shine my shoes, so how dare you do this? I've had that happen too. And I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to do all that, but it was a famous bass player, nice guy, but I had my violin and he came over and he was trying to touch my violin. I'm like, you don't touch my violin. Touch I don't care who violin? You are. You don't touch my violin. Who does that? You don't walk up to somebody and touch their instrument. You just don't.
Yeah, that's the
answer. I wouldn't grow up and grab his bass.
Right.
So there's like this similar disrespect thing. And I was like, excuse me. No, please don't do that. And I was respectful. And I just said, please don't touch that. I used to play. I don't care if you used to play. This is my instrument. Right. You don't So there's this weird thing sometimes that happens with people. They're like, because I'm so famous, I can do what I want to do. I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way.
I think generationally, right, there are these things that we've moved away from. But certainly thinking historically, before music pedagogy and education was available in that mass level, like in colleges and in schools, you had this real kind of rites of passage way of getting to it that came with all of the really destructive kind of talk and exchange of violating boundaries and you're being real mean and just right. And a lot of that is still sneaky there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But now we mask it in the ability to do things at a certain level. And I mean, like, we both know that there are some really killing, skillful people out here, people that can do amazing things on their instrument. But oftentimes, the thing that I lament about is at what cost? Like, now, what comes with that in terms of your sentiment about the music and how you're able to work with other people and how you're able to create music that is going to have a lasting impact? Less than just saying, okay, I did that and now it's there. So that's what I've always, like I said, try to keep in the forefront. It's like, what are we doing? We're trying to move people here with this music. Mm-hmm. That's what it's for. And when that happens, the rest is easy. You know what I mean? And oftentimes becomes in that way very skillfully or technically able to be dissected and appreciated. But when it lacks that, then all of that technical acumen kind of is for nothing except more information. And we need more art, less information.
For sure. It's one of those things where we work so hard and for so long to master whatever instrument we have chosen. And it could be just our voice. It could be just our writing chops. It could be a piano or a violin. But the older I get, the more I'm like, oh, I'm picking up other instruments now because it doesn't matter what instrument I use. It's what am I trying to say? Mm-hmm. It's totally, those are just tools. It's all just tools. And it's what am I really trying to say? What am I trying to get across? Like you said, we're trying to move people here. And that's really the focus. So for the jazz thing, because of our family heritage, I wanted to at least be at a level, but and learn as much as I could. But I started late. I didn't start playing improv or listening to jazz until I was like 26. So there was a lot of time in there where I just wasn't getting certain things. And then I really tried to lock it down. I didn't go to music school. I just studied with lots of different people and listened to a whole lot of music and just kept trying and going out and falling on my face and going out and falling on my face and looking for people who would let me try that. That was the other part, because violin players are not the first call. So I had to start my own band. So that added a whole nother level. It was like, I don't really want to be a leader, but I guess I have to. Can't be a side person because nobody's going to call me. And as a singer, it's the same thing. If you don't have your own band, usually you're not going to work that much. You have to get your own group. Or at least have some really good friends that, okay, let's do it. And they do call you. But it doesn't happen for me that way. It's got to the point now where it's like, what instrument can I use or what people can I use on this project to get what I'm trying to say out to the world? It doesn't even matter it's great if they're great players. I don't care what style they play. If they're great players and we can work together and they know how to talk to other people, then we have something to work with. If they don't know how to talk to me, they can be the best player in the world, but I don't want to work with you. If you're just nasty or mean or something like that, I don't want to work with you.
Yeah.
Because I've seen that a lot too. There's these great players who are so famous and blah, blah, blah. And you meet them and they're not nice people at all. And, oh, okay. Thank you very much. See you. Bye. Right. You go do you over there and it'll be fun.
Yeah.
So, because what are we trying to do? If we're creating a culture of good vibration and creating culture in the world, do we want to create a culture that's elitist and you can't be part of my band? You can't play this style of music anywhere near me because that's not true to the art, or, you know, what is that? What is that? That's why I'm like so interested in these bands that do the meshing, because there's so much great music comes out of that. Just crazy stuff. You're like, oh man. And then you meet people that you would never have met. There's some bluegrass players that are phenomenal. And then you've got, there's bluegrass players. And then there's some Brazilian musicians that I wish they would get together, because their styles, there's some similarities in there, and they all play 10 different instruments.
Yeah.
And like, you know, because that's not part, for whatever reason, the American culture is not that way. You don't just grab 20 different instruments unless you're playing in country music, bluegrass music. If you're playing in Brazilian music or Latin music, they tend to play, a lot of people tend to play 5 and 6 instruments very well. We play one if we're lucky.
Well, in church, they got that a little bit. There's that move around the rhythm section, organist, drums, bass, guitar, maybe. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes what happens in the church tradition is that they're missing formal aspects as well. And so, like, for me, I feel like I occupy a bunch of these similar spaces where I grew up in church. So I understand that space as well. I was in music school. But I wasn't studying jazz formally until I got to grad school, really. So I certainly identify with the element of you don't know what you're talking about and you can't be included in these conversations and all of that kind of stuff. This is how it's supposed to go. And yeah, it's just, it's always that grass is greener. But I find that, like I said, the people who are really at a high level, who do have the voices that ring out true, they're not those folks. And there's a few folks, like I said, I'll follow suit and not deal with any name dropping, but there's a few pretty notable folks that are hanging around here. And I've had the chance to have some conversations with sometimes. And it's yeah, you just, it's a refreshing air of just humility. Take a load off. This is cool. I was doing these things. I didn't do these things. And these are people who, yeah, world renowned, like on a high level. And so I think that it really, like you said, it's about what kind of world are you trying to create? What kind of culture are you trying to create? Like one where you're part and I got to be on this pedestal, or that you can make music together. We can create together, one of inclusion. So certainly what I'm trying to do. And by the way, the stuff that you've got out right now is killing. The trio with a percussionist and another string player, yes?
Yeah,
that stuff is killing.
Thank you very much. But yeah, that's the idea. So I'm gonna keep doing things. Yeah, and now I'm trying to get through COVID and do similar things. Keep grabbing different people. I still want to do Hannah Cubed. It's like you and me and your dad, you know. And while we could make it Hannah 4. And put my sister Penny in there.
You gotta get Kyle too, then, right?
And Kyle, yeah. But yeah, it's one of those things. We just gotta figure it out and make it happen and figure out what tunes are gonna work and create some things that are gonna work. Because your dad does more traditional stuff, straight ahead stuff. Penny does more R&B and gospel stuff. And then I don't know what the heck I do. I would just like jump in the middle.
I'm all over the place too.
Yeah.
Whatever we do.
So, you know, it's going to. Yeah, it would be a riot. It would be a riot. So we've got to like book some time, get it all together. And even if we have to just do it this way, sending tracks back and forth and working with them, it would be really cool. Yeah. and sit down and write some stuff. Oh, I hear this voice and this voice. And like, I got a song I wrote ages ago that I want your dad to sing on. Nice. I wrote one for Penny that's a gospel tune, but it's so big a production number that I can't, I'm trying to figure out how the heck am I going to pay for it. But we got to do it one time in New York. I did a concert back in 2005.
Ooh.
And Penny sang on it. And it's a gospel tune. It's like a one hit wonder gospel song.
Wow.
It's like, I probably never get it again.
That's interesting and amazing, because maybe just before then was around the time that I was singing with Penny. I was singing back up when she was the Fertile Ground record. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, no, I was singing back up with her around that time. And I don't recall, that just sounds like a big project. I'm like, man, how did I miss that one? But yeah, that was like 2004, because I was, I'm about to date myself. But yeah, that was a good time back then. And certainly formative for me, because I was in New Orleans as well. And I was singing with a group down there called Waterseed. And that band is still working today, but with a completely different personnel. I believe it was like silently one guy who was the band leader that I didn't realize was pulling the strings, but they're still killing. But I was singing with them and I was singing with Penny. And so I was getting my chops as, okay, I'm out here, I'm doing the thing. And those were some of my first really formative experiences, being able to be in performance settings.
Is there any place that folks can find you online now?
Absolutely. I am, of course, on social media, Instagram, Facebook. So really, I'm most active on Instagram, a little bit more passively active on Facebook. But so at MYKLHANA, just, and I'm on YouTube. I've got clips and things up on YouTube from years back when I wasn't really kind of doing it seriously. And I'm in the midst of kind of building a website and getting the stuff together for some of this new content that's coming, definitely with E.L. Scott and John Doe soon enough. But yeah, I've got a couple things that I'm featured on streaming platforms. I did a record with another group of North Carolina Zoop, and we did a record a few years back called Out of Reach, and you can find that on Spotify as well. Another group out of North Carolina, a couple of my friends that I've worked with in an Irresistible Groove Band. Bahama is the band. Simple Things is the record, the name of the album. And the track that I'm on is called Reprise. I'm actually doing a few backing vocals as well on the record, but that's the one that's featured pretty prominently.
Pass an offering, please. You gotta tell the truth when you're talking to me. There's forgiveness for ignorance when acknowledgement speaks. The truth is in the music, it'll prove it to you. Follow the seed. The truth is in the music, it'll prove it to you. Follow the seed. Hard to see and often harder to hear. The moment you depart from truth is the start of your fear. Joy is in a smile, like pain is a part of the tear. Joy is in a smile, like pain is a part of the tear. We're all aiming for happiness when the target is clear.
And I got a few other things I'd be remiss if I didn't mention as we talk about jazz. Lenora Zenzele Helm, a vocal professor and just all around badass pioneering woman and musician. But she's my vocal professor and the director of vocal studies at North Carolina Central. And I'm on a record of hers from 2011 called Conversation with God. And it's basically the vocal rendition of the John Coltrane. And yeah, that was pretty cool. And actually, here's the link. The rhythm section on that was including Lance Scott on bass, who I'll be having some with his project with E.L. Scott. So yeah, a few things. I'm out there. If you type in MYK apostrophe L Hannah on streaming platforms, you find a few things. And as well, I'm on social media at Michael Hannah too. And website coming soon to be able to streamline all of those things.
All right. Thank you so very much for spending time with me today and talking to the audience and letting us know what you're up to and exposing us to just how you think about the world and how you create art. And I appreciate it. And hopefully we'll stimulate some growth out there for some other artists to keep doing the same. So thanks for coming to Tia Time.
Thank you so much for having me. Look forward to talking again soon.
For sure.
All right, now. Peace.
Thank you for joining us this week on Tia Time with Artist. Make sure to visit our website, tiaviolin.com, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes and never miss an episode. Please leave us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate your comments and will mine them to bring you more amazing episodes. I would like to thank this inaugural season sponsors, the folks at Jazz Lines of Bend, Michigan, or JAM. Michigan Art Share, a program of Michigan State University Extension, is a partner in supporting the Tia Time podcast and Sham Bones Music. Without their support, this podcast would not be possible. Thank you so much. If you would also like to contribute to the show, you can find us on patreon.com. If you want to continue the conversation about topics discussed on the show or start new ones with like-minded people, join us at the Tia Time Lounge on Facebook. Thank you for listening. See you next week at Tia Time. Thank you for joining us this week on Tia Time with Artist. Make sure to visit our website at tiaviolin.com, where you can subscribe to the show and never miss an episode. Please leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts to expand the reach of the show. We really appreciate that help. And we'd also like to say thank you so very much to our sponsors, Michigan Art Share, a program of Michigan State University Extension, and Cold Plunge Records. And also all of our Patreon supporters. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you. We'll see you next week at Tia Time.